Now, YouTube announced last week that Americans are now watching YouTube more on TV than on mobiles or desktops. So what's the best stuff there to watch? Well, we asked Elaine Burke from For Tech's Sake podcast to tell us all about it. Elaine, you're very welcome back to the show.
Yeah, good to see you.
Good to see you as well. I'm very excited about this because always looking for new shows, and it's just become another like streaming platform for us essentially. It has become something that you watch on your telly rather than your phone. I find myself doing it as well with like just different vlogs. I just pop them on in the background as I'm going about my day, and I love it.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're a vlog watcher?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, I mean, people watch podcasts these days. That's like a phenomenon that I honestly don't understand myself.
Sorry, but I'm all for it, but I hate when when a podcast is visually doing something and I'm like, hang on a second, tell me what's happening.
Yeah. Stop talking about someone's silly hair. I want to see the silly
hair. Or at least describe it to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, people are just getting involved and watching it more on telly.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It opens up spaces of content that works for television, mm-hmm. that people are actually viewing on television, that maybe TV producers never thought would be a thing that they ever put on air in terms of like a national broadcaster or even a local broadcaster. And, you know, the phenomenon of watching YouTube on TV has been helped by the fact that like a lot of TVs sold now be smart TVs. They have the YouTube app preloaded on there. And in the US in particular, they said like the viewing time hours on TVs in the States were more going to YouTube than anything else.
Oh, my God.
And then YouTube being aware of that because they're their business at the end of the day, mm-hmm. and they have to kind of monopolize these things. So they've actually started introducing ad formats that are built for the big screen. So you wouldn't normally get like a standard YouTube ad would ask you to like scan a QR code because, you know, the standard viewing expectation is that you're on a phone or a device and that's your device that you're using to watch the thing. So you're not going to whip it out to also scan a QR code. But if you're doing TV advertising, you can introduce that.
Yeah.
So I like they can obviously do some clever things in the background, identify what device you're streaming on and actually adapt the advertising to that as well. And then they kind of create content that is built around second screen experiences as well. So often like things like vlogging and stuff like that, you're pottering around the house when you're listening to it, and some people are, you know, faffing about on their phone when they're not paying attention to the TV that they're consuming. So something that's got a really simple format that's just two people on a mic chatting or a vlogger, that doesn't require you actually paying attention to the screen, following a plot or anything like that. So it actually behooves the second screen experience, but also the doing something else while consuming content.
It's just exactly what we need in our lives, Elaine, is more screens. That's what we've all been
more
begging
content.
For.
Yeah, it's great.
Who are the content creators that are building big studios now?
Yeah, so this is what's really interesting. So Neil Moen is the CEO of YouTube. It's YouTube's 20th birthday, essentially. At the moment. So that's kind of like why a lot of talk of YouTube is happening at the moment. And he did this big statement about the creators on the platform and how things have changed over those 20 years. And he was talking about the creators being like the startups of the entertainment industry. But I suppose what that's kind of revealing is that, yeah, they may want to be disruptive and pull focus away from the more mainstream content producers like your TV and Hollywood and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like a lot of startups, they do eventually want to become the big companies, the behemoths that have production studios and that. And that's actually happening now. So like Mr. Beast, very famous, we've spoken about, he has a whole production team behind him. But there's a creator of a thing called Alan's World, Alan's Universe. It's kind of like targeted at tweens and teens. It's this kind of glossy TV show. Some of the episodes can be like 25 minutes long. Some of them are over an hour. And he's now building a massive studio to produce his episodes. And like a lot of them are moving in that direction. Amelia Moldenberg has been doing Chicken Shop Date, that kind of chat show format. But it's like a bit cringy and awkward because she's pretending she's on a date with these people. And she asks very direct, strange questions. Not the kind of things you get on a contrived show. She's been going for 10 years now. I didn't realise how long it's been going for. She's got a profile in the New Yorker at the moment, celebrating her 10 years. And she's got a whole production team and a production company behind her. So a lot of them are actually moving into like being established creative content makers, more like the mainstream, but they're still primarily YouTube producers.
If you even look at like Chicken Shop Date, like everyone wants to be on that. Like all of the big names want to be on that. So naturally you are going to grow it and grow it and grow it so that it can house these people but still feel very casual.
And actually you see like another one that I like, that's the interview format, is Hot Ones, which is you are eating very, very spicy chicken wings while being asked questions about your life and career. And such an incredible, interesting format. It's really simple, and Sean Evans, the host, is actually a really talented interviewer.
Yeah.
And he's got a really cool, chill vibe as well while these people are sweating out their eyes fries and eating chicken wings.
Well, I mean, he's caught them off guard massively.
Yeah, exactly. But you can see how that has become so popular that like SNL does skits about hot ones.
Yeah.
So it's become such a phenomenon that the TV is actually referencing back to what's happening on YouTube because they can expect their audience is going to understand that reference. And they like Maya Rudolph doing Beyonce doing hot ones is one of my favorite things that's ever happened.
But like this is the thing about like linear media. It's not just straight across the board anymore. You don't just have print, radio, television. Everything else is all the little crooks that are in between it. And like that, people are consuming their media in totally different ways. Like they're watching YouTube, they're listening to podcasts, they're also listening to the radio, and they're also watching telly. So you can revert back to everything. Also, people are consuming a lot of things via TikTok and being chronically online, which is how I know about this clip. This is going to mean a lot to some people and a little less to others, but just have a listen to this.
Do you know them?
No, but in DeClerb, we all fam.
What?
In DeClerb, we all fam.
I don't... In the club, we are all family. Are you racist?
No. Like, that just took off.
Oh my
like,
God.
It was all over my FYP for like a good like 2 or 3 weeks.
And I guess that means like the young people are getting into Broad City now, which they should. It's a great show. It's over now. But Broad City is an example of that crossover of the streams as well because it's now popular on TikTok. Yeah. Originally, it was a web series. It started out as a YouTube series by Alana Glazer and Abby Jacobson. They just wanted to put their content out there. They had this great idea for a show and they just, you know, self-published essentially. And then it became this massive sensation of a actual Comedy Central TV show. And now they've gone off and done more things. Abby Jacobson has starred in shows for Netflix. Alana Glazer has been popping up in films and things like that. So it was a great launch pad for them. And that kind of idea that you could actually launch a career by publishing things online, that still very much exists. And you see it with comedians especially. And it might not be that they do a YouTube web series. They might just have a clip that goes viral on TikTok or Instagram or something like that. And that's how they get picked up. It's a really great launching pad too.
And then they get accused of being an influencer and everyone's like, ugh. It's like they've been working behind the scenes for 10 years. It's just one thing actually did well for them. We've obviously spoken about Chicken Shop Date and Hot Ones. A lot of these things are all comedy based, but it's not just comedy, is it? Because YouTube is also a news source, and as it grows on bigger screens you can even get free films on it.
This is really interesting. So you can see how big studios again are realizing that this platform is not a joke. It's not just a niche viewership. Like, it's very, very much mainstream now. So Warner Brothers Studios decided recently to just drop a bunch of its content for free to view on YouTube. Full movies. Now, some of them are, you know, The Adventures of Pluto Nash, which is a very forgettable Eddie Murphy film that existed at one point. But then there's also The Mission, which is credited as being one of the best films ever made. So like about 30, just over 30 Warner Brothers films are fully available to watch for free on YouTube because Warner Brothers can monetize that content and, you know, add ads to it and get the ad revenue from YouTube. With a share in revenue from YouTube. And they have such a back catalogue of content. If they keep doing that, you could end up with hundreds of movies free to view there. Because there's already some stuff on there that is pirated and YouTube is always fighting to take that stuff down. So I suppose this is the content producers, the big studios, realising that this is a route through which people want to watch our content. Yeah. So let's make it available.
Never even thought about that, of how they would make money. But obviously they would make it from the ads. And then if you're paying for YouTube Premium, I'm sure that they're getting a cut of all that for actually just putting their stuff on there. But it's essentially free for the punter to sit down and do
free
it.
For the viewer. You might just have to sit through some ads, maybe ask those ads lastly, scan a QR code because they're assuming you're watching TV.
And then you might be scanning a QR code and then you might be going down a different rabbit hole altogether. Kids programming is also huge on YouTube. Is it any good though?
So like I do get asked a lot about like things like YouTube Kids and is it okay for kids. The main thing to be aware of when it comes to anything, when it comes to the platforms for kids, a lot of it is regulated by self-reports. So that means instead of someone evaluating content and saying, yes, absolutely, I can guarantee that this is appropriate for children of a certain age, it's the creators of the content will label it themselves and maybe an algorithm will try and figure out if they've labeled it correctly. But it's not the most efficient process. It's not the kind of care and attention that you get from mainstream children's programming, which has to hit a very high bar, not just in terms of the content and its appropriateness, but even in what it contributes to a child's development. That's why we've had in the past things like Sesame Street, which is really fun for kids to watch, really fun for adults to watch as well, if I'm being totally honest. It has these cute characters, but it's always got a kind of a degree of learning to what is being discussed on the show. And that might be, you know, A, B, C or 1, 2, 3, but it also might be learning about like how to deal with bullies and how to talk to one another and support one another and stuff like that. YouTube Kids.
Something I've never even thought of. Sorry, yeah. This time actually just like, oh yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah. And YouTube Kids is a total free-for-all. And you do have content creators that become popular there because they've done things that looks like soft and squishy and child-friendly. Like Cocomelon started on YouTube, ended up
Yeah.
And then became a Netflix phenomenon. Netflix noticed how successful this was on YouTube. But it is just, you know, soft baby characters and like 10 hours of Wheels on the Bus go round and round. Yeah. It is a bit like zombified children's content. It's not really doing much in terms of like their development around like that. Kids will certainly like it the same way kids would like to eat ice cream all day.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's good TV for kids.
So I mean, I suppose with everything, like, you know, you have to monitor your kids on the internet regardless. So you can't just hope that what they're going to throw on is going to be okay.
Yeah, and really being aware of that aspect of it where it's like it's actually self-reported as opposed to regulated. Like you could sit your kids in front of, you know, RT Junior or CBBC and know that that content has been heavily vetted and nothing untowards is going to come up there. You can't do that when it comes to things like YouTube Kids.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking now, like, you've got obviously the YouTube Kids side of it. You've got all these movies that are streaming on there. You've got like the success rates of like huge podcasts that are now like sitting like on YouTube and being their own thing. Are content creators going to get swallowed up in all of this?
So that's what's really interesting. Like, YouTube is actually making claims now based on some stats that they are more popular for podcast listening than Spotify, which I think is huge. Again, I don't really understand it, but it's a thing. But what's really interesting is YouTube sells this idea then that like anyone can create on YouTube and become massive. But there's some really interesting research coming out of the States, because what's happened with YouTube is they've stopped reporting the actual volume of content that's on its platform. They used to report that all the time, and they've stopped doing that now. And there's a theory that maybe they've stopped doing that because it will reveal the tiny, tiny percentage of content that actually performs and actually not only makes money but gets viewers even. Yeah. Because some researchers tried to figure out through a sampling of, I think it was like over 100,000 videos, and to get a feel for them, like what would be the average view count and the average kind of monetization. And they found that it's a tiny percentage. You're talking like single figure percentages in terms of who's making money and who's actually getting views. And the vast majority of content is really low in views, like maybe just like 14 views or maybe 100 if you're lucky. So selling the idea that like anyone can become a star here, it is a possibility. You know, we've seen it happen, but I do feel like those examples are probably more like lightning in a bottle than they're made out to be.
Yeah,
like
okay.
They are definitely the exception and not the rule.
Do we know, and this is going to be such like is there an algorithm that feeds us, like, do we know what you, like, we've no idea what TikTok's algorithm is. Like, they notoriously have that locked up. We kind of have an idea of what Instagram's is to an extent because you have to follow places and all that. Is YouTube kind of the same? Are they going to give you suggestions, like if you follow me on YouTube and then I was talking about like a new mobile phone, and then next thing it's like, well, you might like tech journalists, like, is that the way that it goes around?
So a lot of them follow that kind of interest graph versus social graph. So social graph would be like based on who you follow, who you're connected with, because YouTube does have kind of like an element of being a social platform as well as being a video sharing platform. And it, the recommended videos, you can turn it on in a way that like you just endlessly watch videos. They just keep getting served up from the recommendations pile. Now, I do recommend turning that off to reclaim your life. And I've even turned off like YouTube recommendations and stuff like that, because you can find like very quickly sometimes problematic content can get recommended there, and a lot of people are concerned about that and they think it's to do with the algorithm. And I'm not saying it's not, and that I absolutely advocate for algorithmic transparency and all of those things that are needed there, but there's an element of that that's also to do with the volume of content that falls into that bucket is actually quite high when you're talking about the manosphere content, toxic content, misogynistic content. It unfortunately is very popular. And it's very prolific and it's very profitable. So there is a lot of it as well. And when you've got a lot to choose from, you know, an algorithm that's unfeeling and, you know, not doesn't have passions one way or the other, it's just choosing from a bucket that happens to have a lot of content to serve up in it. The same way there's a lot of cat videos, there's a lot of ASMR content, there's a lot of like podcasters recording their podcasts and stuff.
A lot of good that we can actually watch about that there. Yeah, it's just mad. I'd be so interested to know. I never even considered myself as someone who like consumes vlogs on YouTube on my telly. I just didn't even think, oh yeah, other people are doing this as well. I just thought I cracked the code on something, but it turns out no, I have not one original idea going on. Elaine Burke, thank you so much for always coming into us. That's Elaine Burke from For Tech's Sake podcast. Thank you so much for that. I'd be so interested to know though, do you watch YouTube on your telly? You can text in any recommendations on 51552 or 087-187-9200. Elaine, we'll chat to you again soon. We'll be right back after this.
2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox.